On the tee, Jack Nicklaus.
This is the minute that millions around the world have waited for.
We will allow you to enjoy all of this. They are dancing in the pubs of Dublin. Harrington with an ace.
And we have a shining star at sunset. Rory continues his run to greatness.
The return to glory.
Hey guys, welcome back to another episode of the Bogeyman Golf Podcast hosted by Michael and Johnny. It's the 29th of January. We're finished the third week of this international swing. We're leaving the UAE. We're going to Bahrain now in a few days' time. It'd actually be really nice if either of us were going to Bahrain. It's currently pissing rain outside. I'm sick of this winter, man. I don't like winter.
I know. Like I was, a few of my brother played golf on Sunday. He hasn't played in months, and he was really looking forward to it. And he texts me, and he's like, "It's so windy. We're just hitting four irons off tees and trying to keep the ball under the wind." He said it was just, man, I'm a fair weather golfer. Like, I need warmth. I need, I don't need wind. My game doesn't suit any sort of, like, my game's not good even in the best of weather, let alone the elements. Like,
you're selling yourself short there. You're an 18 handicap, who realistically is a 12. I think this is a case of you getting to that 12 number and playing enough. But anyway, we'll get on to that. We've got a lot of golf coming up, actually. We'll be playing a good bit now over February. You're on your midterm break, which is nice. So we get a bit of golf in. We'll get a scorecard in your hand.
Yeah, actually dying for it. But then every time I get so excited, and then I'm putting in the living room, and then I look out the window and I'm like, really? I'll just watch the golf instead.
Fair. So talking about watching golf, Thorbjørn Olesen has claimed his 8th DP World Tour victory in actually incredibly impressive fashion. I saw a statistic that going into the final round, he'd converted 6 of 7 leads whenever he was 54 hole leader, which you gotta think he was definitely gonna convert that when he had a 4-stroke lead going into the final round Sunday. He ended up what, 6 strokes clear in the end. He was just an absolute demon. I think we can go into it properly now in a second, but Olesen, he was an absolute machine. He hit 80% of fairways. Compare that to last week where I had backed him and he hit less than 50% of fairways. He made 84% of greens, an average 1.4 putts per green, which is almost half a stroke better than the field. So you do that, you're probably going to win. You hit every green, hit every fairway, put less than everyone else, that's gonna win you the tournament. He did great. He did very, very well. What did you make of it?
Yeah, it was nice to see him again, because I know he had his issues and he kind of fell off the kind of map a little bit, and he wasn't playing as well. Like, to go from when he was on the Ryder Cup to where he was now. So it was nice to see him pull one together and get back. Like, he gave a big long interview after as well, when he was after he'd won, he was holding his son up and he was just saying, this is what it was about to, it's about to win. And it was just, he's a classy guy. I know, all things considering, I think he's a real golfer, if that makes sense. He's really and he has a nice swing and he's just pure. So I was
he's in the machine. He's he looked really strong. I think everyone obviously talks about how strong Rory is, but Olesen had those veins going down through his arms. The man's he looks jacked.
Yeah, he's definitely done work out in the gym, because he's a lot bigger than he was before. But his putting, he didn't shoot the lights out with his putting this week. He was incredible, but the past few kind of weeks he's been really trending with his putting, and I think it's another. I know we're not, it's months away, but again, it's another European golfer who's starting to play. He's playing well, has a win, and you know, obviously we don't know what's going to happen by the end of it, but it's just someone else to go, Jesus, there's another person that could come back in and fill that void of a senior pro with all these young lads.
Yeah, Danish golf seems pretty good. Thomas Bjorn, but going into the final round, he was it's like asking a father which one of his children is his favorite. Because obviously Bjorn is just kind of the godfather of Danish golf. He had Olesen there. He had Rasmus Højgaard. The week before, he had Nikolaj Højgaard and Rasmus in the mix again. They're in a pretty good... And then they have Michael Thorbjørnsson. Is this world number one amateur now after Nick Dunlap has left. He's the next big thing, and again, Danish golfer. But We obviously were both kind of tracking Tom McKibben and Alex Fitzpatrick, both of whom finished tied for 16th and made a cool €30,527. Not bad for a week's work. I mean, you take that.
I know we get into we had them at whatever, we had them on our bets for top tens, but I'm gonna give us a get out of jail credit, because I think both of them are probably happy enough. I don't think like they weren't ecstatic with their week. I think there's definitely left some shots out there and they could have performed better, but I don't think they were unhappy with their game. What were they, 8, 9 under? Did they finish in?
14 under.
Oh, I'm well off. Yeah, last time we probably saw 14 under. Like, I mean, you offered them 14 under at the start of the week, they definitely would have taken it.
Yeah, like Alex Fitzpatrick, in the last 2 weeks, he's made over €140,000 from a golf course. That's some very good earning. That's nice, you know. Tom McKibben's done one 10 grand better. He's made nearly 160,000, 159,000. Yeah, a little over 160,000. So
yeah, well, they both
we're in the wrong game. We should be playing golf. We shouldn't be talking about golf.
But they both lost us a fiver as well. So if they wanted to revolutionize the
Yeah.
fiver, great, because we backed you.
Yeah, Tom, I'll send you my Revolut, Tom. You can send us the fiver each. I appreciate it. You're doing well, obviously. Who else kind of stood out for you, I guess, from the DP World Tour side? I had a little bit of I was just kind of keeping an eye on Sean Crocker and Callum Chinquing. Callum, I'm going to be talking about a little bit later on, but a few of the guys kind of stood out for me from the DP World Tour side. You know what? Namely, Richard Mansell. So he shot 16 under, so just inside the top 10, 64, 71, 70, 67. He kind of been having a quiet enough year. At the start of last year, he played in that Hero Cup over in Abu Dhabi Golf Club. He's kind of one of those guys that Luke Donald and the European team were looking at as someone that could potentially break their way into the Ryder Cup team on Europe if he had a big year. He didn't. He didn't have a great year, but he's someone that I'm just keeping an eye on. I'm tracking now. I'll see how he does over this season. Good guy, good golfer. He's also like part of that kind of crew with like Ewan Ferguson, Sean Crocker, Connor Syme, like these kind of cool young guys on the tour at the moment. So he's one that kind of stood out to me. But Eddie Pepperell as well, tied for 16th, also at 14 under par. He's done very well. Had a good 2 weeks, I guess, on the DP World Tour after missing the Dubai Invitational and kicking off about it on Twitter. He's making a little bit of bread, which is nice for him.
Yeah, I looked at the three guys, like Xander Lombard. I was really impressed with him, especially the kind of his first three rounds were so solid. And then his fourth round, like even he had an eagle on the third.
Yeah.
And then he had a triple bogey on the 12th, and it just rocketed him. It rocked him. And I think he was so solid up until then. Now he did pick up another two birdies and two bogeys on his way in, but he was just that was really the really only blemish on his on his on his on his four rounds. But I was just really impressed with him. Another Safa. But I thought definitely someone that was kind of keeping an eye on me when I was looking at it.
That triple bogey was weird. I remember watching that live. And it was just a massive, like a big, just he just flailed it out to the right. It was a bad drive, but it just came out of nowhere because he was very much in the mix. Like you're saying, he was like 4 under, through the first 5 holes. He was in the mix because Olsson went down. He had like a double bogey in the first couple of holes, so he came back to the field pretty quickly. So between that mixing with Xander going 4 under through five, it was kind of like okay, this guy's kind of in the mix, and then went through that kind of par patch, and then. As Olsson kicked on and as Rasmus Højgaard kicked on, Xander kind of just went the opposite way and just kind of shit the bed, essentially.
Like he didn't bogey anything in his first 2 rounds. Like, he was so solid. So it was like really surprising. Even in the third round, he was still solid and he had two bogeys. So definitely someone I think you keep an eye on him. I think I'm a fan of his, all right.
Yeah, it's funny. So we spoke about this before we hit record, and there was a point on the Sky Sports broadcast where after Olsson hit his tee shot on the 18th hole, he'd pretty much got the tournament sewn up. So apart from anything kind of catastrophic happening, like Rasmus went into the water. So like if Olsson had gone into the water and kind of just made it interesting, the tournament was sewn up aside from that. And the cameraman just zoomed in right onto his eyes, and it was like a really tight shot. You could just about see the top of his forehead. You didn't quite see his cap, and then it kind of went like halfway up to his nose. So it was a really intense shot on just his eyes. And he was just like staring really intensely. I think it's probably because he's like quite a, like a slim and muscular man anyway. I don't know what it is, but maybe he's like weather beaten and stuff, but he just had like really angry looking eyes. And then the camera kind of just pulls out and he's got this like big grin on his face. Like he's like having the time of his life. People are like, this guy looks like a psycho. There's a scene in How I Met Your Mother, the TV series, where they talk about that same thing where the guy is smiling. One guy that they're talking about is smiling, but if you cover his mouth, he's got like really intense, angry eyes. And Olsen was like kind of like the same. Actually, like it made me feel like I was watching Patrick Bateman from American Psycho, where he's like smiling. He's got like the axe over his head, over his shoulder. He's there about to kill Jared Leto. It's almost as if like Durban Olsen was kind of doing the same kind of butcher job on the field. To be fair to him, he shot a great week and he was making everything on the greens. It's kind of like he was just butchering the field and the golf course. And I was almost kind of expecting him in the winner's interview to be like, I had to kill a lot of people, which I guess if you see American Psycho, you get the quote. Or like whatever the golf equivalent is of like, you know, I had to shoot a lot of birdies or whatever it is. But I like Olsen, and it kind of just reminded me of that character from American Psycho, which is a great character. Christian Bale is really good in it. But yeah. I'm going to workshop that nickname a little bit more, because we need some kind of like serial killer Olsen comp, you know, because Tommy Kip and the kid, we need something for Torbjörn Olsen, the mass murderer.
Yeah, but I don't think
that's terrible. We won't go with that, but something along those lines.
We call him the psycho or the serial killer. I think he'll ever come onto a pod or ever wanted to talk to us ever. If we call him the psycho.
It'd be so hard to explain to his agent. No, I swear to God.
Like him.
The psycho is it's a good thing. It's a compliment, I swear.
We're not just putting him.
Yeah, but I guess like next time you look at him, like if he's on the broadcast, just keep an eye on his eyes, because I heard like obviously he's focused and he's like trying to win, so he's obviously paying attention. But then the camera zoomed out and he looked as if he was having the time of his life. Himself and his caddy were just there smiling away, and you're like, that didn't look like that like a second ago. You know,
like if he was an actor, he could definitely be a very good villain. Like a villain we love to like. Yeah, I could definitely see that.
But that also then made me think, Patrick Bateman, right, definitely plays golf in American Psycho. He's definitely a golfer, and he'd definitely be good because he'd be just like so like anal and psychotic about it. Like everything is meticulous and has to hit at the right attack angle and everything, because, you know, he's a psycho.
His drip watch would also be amazing. His golf course would be so nice.
Have you ever noticed how in movies and TV shows, if you want to portray someone as a bad guy in a movie, make them play golf? Every single time.
Yeah, I suppose it's probably upper class, you know.
Well, they'll make someone look like
financial villain, yeah. You know, that's what rich people do, especially in the States. So I can see they're not going to have him playing bowling, I suppose, you know, or no. Like it's, yeah.
If it's like a legal drama series or whatever series it is, the bad guy will get kind of confronted on the golf course and they'll be like, oh yeah, of course he plays golf. You know, all bad guys play golf. It's a lazy stereotype that I am very annoyed by. But it got me thinking, who's the best fictional golfer from movies? So there's obviously so many TV shows that you can include. We're not going to get into that. But we put this list together, a top 10 list of who would be the best fictional golfers. I'm going to start off with number 10, right?
Can I just say this is definitely like a pint conversation when you're, you know, it's a little off piece of what we normally do, but like this is, I really enjoyed this conversation.
Especially as we kind of get to like the 3-2-1 spots, I don't think people will agree necessarily with who we think is the best. But I think that's why we do this. That's why I do this. In at number 10 for me is Orris Goldfinger from the Sean Connery James Bond movie Goldfinger. It's not a massive scene, to be honest, within the kind of wider movie. But Bond wins his like 18-hole match against Goldfinger. And on the 18th green, Goldfinger has like a 1-foot putt, maybe a 2-foot. Like easy little tap, and you and I were standing over it. We just knock it in one-handed and not paying attention to it. They're having some kind of chats, and he's like, so like, Goldfinger turns to him and goes, so like, what are we doing here? Why are we playing golf? And James Bond just drops like a massive Nazi imprinted gold bar basically on Goldfinger's feet. Goldfinger hits the putt, misses it. It's like a dead right, hard curving right putt. But I think that your man Golfinger would be a good golfer because he'd kind of be like Donald Trump. He'd have like a few little casual drops. Maybe, you know, maybe he said that didn't cross the water there. You know, maybe miraculously he finds it in the trees. Golfinger for me is someone that's a little bit shady. But James Bond, he seems to be a very good golfer. Now, not the greatest. Sean Connery doesn't have the greatest swing in the world. Definitely not as good a swing as.
He's Scottish though. I like he's got and I don't know. I don't think Daniel Craig would be a good golfer. That Bond doesn't look. I think Pierce Brosnan is in the Sean Connery is a good golfer, I'd
Yeah.
say.
Sean Connery is also a big golfer himself, but at that time, I think he wasn't quite as into golf as he might have been in his later years because he was talking about how he's like, you know, a scratch golfer and, you know, no offense to Sean Connery back in the day, but he didn't have a scratch golfer swing. So that's my number 10. So in the list, there's a number of reasons. He's James Bond. James Bond plays golf. He's like one of the few occasions when someone cool plays golf in a movie. So we needed to put that in there.
Yeah, I definitely think that. I think in number nine, and this is, I think, it's more, I think, because there's a mix when you get why now. I think Dave Sims from Tin Cup, okay.
Yeah.
So I think Don Johnson, first of all, okay. Don Johnson and Miami Vice, the suit sleeves rolled up. Like, to me, that's
Pulls
like,
off the visor.
no visor, yeah, but like no socks in the shoes, and he's jumping in of a car. Of course, he's in a golf club, and like he's just that little bit of an asshole in it, but just enough where you're kind of like you could be kind of mates with him, but all your mates would think he's an asshole, but you kind of love him anyway. Do you know that sort of like
Yeah.
you know there's always that one lad in the group, you know, so he's gonna hammer everyone, but you kind of go, yeah, we know he's gonna be like, but I love Tin Cup, but it's just typical 90s fashion, as you said, the visor, the big fluffy hair, the tan, the country club vibes. Like, I think he's a really good kind of, as you say, not a bad guy, but enough to be you really want like Roy in Tin Cup, right? Roy Bobby, to beat him. You know, you really
Yeah.
want him. So yeah, I like him, and it's again the Miami Vice. I think, you know, I think we're the same. I think all our dads love Miami Vice, and I just think it just definitely rubs off. Like, I think my dad definitely wanted to be Don Johnson in a sports car with his suit sleeves rolled up. So I don't know if that was all in connected in it as well, but I really like him from Tin Cup.
There's a really cool scene in that movie, which is like it's when Tin Cup makes the bet with David Sims, who can hit their 7 iron further.
Yeah.
And so
Made the 7-Iron famous. Like, the 7-Iron is famous because of Tin Cup.
greatest club ever met. That's
That's
it.
it.
So if anyone that hasn't seen Tin Cup, firstly watch it. Like, I don't think you can call yourself a golf fan and not have seen Tin Cup. Brilliant movie. Really good movie. He gives so basically Tin Cup gives David Sims shit about laying up at Augusta and at the Masters and starts giving him all this shit. And then basically he makes a bet saying, I bet you I can hit my 7 iron further than you. And to be fair, he hits a 7 iron back in the day, 227 yards, which like technology was not that far, not that good. No one was hitting the 7 iron that far back in the day. But then David Sims like steps up. And this is like in the pack, like the garden area of the golf club, the clubhouse. It's not like on the driving range or
It's on
whatever.
like the patio, and he's like
Yeah.
put over a hedge and past the pool and stuff.
Exactly. And so David Sims just like turns maybe like 45 degrees, faces down the driveway of the golf club, and just hits the 7 iron down the middle, and then just looks at Tim Cup and goes, still going. And so, like, Tin Cup bet his car against $1,000. That's all it
Yeah.
was. $1,000 versus my car. Loses his fucking car. It's a great
Yeah.
scene. And, like, yeah, David Sims isn't like a bad guy. Yeah, he kind of is. But he's not a villain in the same way, like, Shooter would be kind of conceived as a
Yeah.
villain. David Sims is just more like, he's kind of just a prick, but a likable prick.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I
So,
got
yeah.
it.
I think he's a great shout for number 9.
Okay, we're looking at number eight. I think if we're going in, you mentioned Happy Gilmore, Chubbs Peterson as the greatest golf coach to ever come across in a movie, arguably. You know, the scene where, you know, he just tells Happy, you're gonna give that shit up, concentrate on golf. Like, you know, it just loads of them. It was like the alligator jumped. I was hooked a ball into the lake. I wanted to pitch it on, and this alligator jumped up and bit my hand off. And it's like, you know. Or even I love when, he's standing in the driving range and there's this woman trying to hit the ball and she can't hit it. And he's like, "You're doing great. Bend those knees. Keep kissing the ball. That's it." And he's just reading a magazine. Or even when he's like easing the tension on him, he goes, "It's all in the hips." Like, it's just, he's the type of golf coach, if you had, he just would take none of your crap and like take none of your excuses. I think Chuzz Peterson, it's one of the arguably the best golf movie ever, but he's so funny, and he's just like, the way I think he coaches, it would be like trying to tell you stories. Like, I mean, I've told you before, I'm not a big man on, okay, cup your hand here and let's throw weight in here. Like, that stuff, I need fields, I need to be, I need someone. So I think he could probably switch between both, and he would be like, tell you a story about someone or get you swinging in a thought. And then obviously with his putting, his happy place, when Happy Gilmore was there smashing the place to bits. A good sports psychologist as well.
He's what I hope Butch Harmon is like in person as a coach. I know, obviously, Butch is really serious and stuff, but I would just love Butch Harmon to be a big character like that. I don't know who Butch is, but how funny would it be if Butch was just that, like, jovial and sarcastic in real life? I think it'd be brilliant.
I don't know if Tiger would have stayed with him as long as
no.
Like that. Tiger was ultra sales. But I mean, I could see Fowler staying with Butch, like, because he was like that. I think Ricky would be like that. I mean, if Ricky is anything like that music video we did with Bubba Watson, I think Butch would have to be a little bit chilled out. Like, was that the Golf Boys? That needs to be resurfaced and put on social media. Like, people like never forget, and then just that video of them jumping off the buggies.
That was so good. I'm going to watch that again this afternoon.
I don't know what they were thinking. Like, ridiculous.
Okay. In at number seven, what have you got?
I think you probably have to go with probably one of my favorite actors. I think if there's so many movies brilliant in, but Legend of Bagger Vance and Matt Damon.
Yeah, Ranulf Tuna.
Yeah, that's his name, isn't it? I think it the best thing about it is he plays it really well as a golfer that is mentally messed. And I think he, as an actor, I think Matt Damon does a really good job of, because when you talk to someone about who's not a golfer and they just don't get it. Like, I mean, you're like, no, you're at Christmas, but you're talking to someone and they're like talking about golf and you're like, yeah, but if I could just get that in my game, like, I know, 5-6 shots, and they're like, you walk around and hit a ball around, like, grow up. And you're like, no, it's so mentally different than that. In that movie, I think he's great. And then the whole thing with Will Smith, and I think the race within golf around that time in America, and like, it touched on little different things. But definitely, that mysterious thing about golf in your head, and I think we've probably had many books we've read on Zen Buddhism and all that sort of the Zen putting out your mind sort of stuff. Nothing works, but whatever. But I think the Matt Damon kind of vibe where you're going, okay, yeah, even the movie, he's a great golfer and he's won whatever, and he's great. I was like, but even he's mentally screwed. So I think he's a great character.
Yeah, it's cool. Great movie. I mean, like, he so obviously Matt Damon's character plays a match against Bobby Jones and Walter Hagen, two of the game's greats. But like you said, it touches on a lot of very social and kind of just personal moral themes, I guess. Obviously, there's the race side, but one scene that really jumps out, I always remember from that movie, is when Matt Damon's ball moves, and he just goes, "My ball moved." And everyone turned around and goes, "I didn't see it, that's fine." And he just turns around and he calls the penalty on himself. And it's just like all about the integrity of the game. And like, that's why it's, just such a good game, and why golf is so important. It's a gentleman's game. So yeah, it's nice little themes in there. I guess kind of in and along those lines, number six for me is Shia LaBeouf's character, Francis Ouimet, in The Greatest Game Ever Played. For me, this is an underrated movie. Like, if you have to watch this, this is peak Disney making good movies.
I would 100% agree. I think it has to be up there, actually, one of the better sports movies. And it's, I don't think Shia LaBeouf gets enough credit for it. I think I said it to you that his swing is actually really good. And it's a, I think, I don't know what he said when he's practicing in the barn or whatever with some old coach, and the coach is fixing his ankle on his, you know, when he's turning and he's getting his, and it, how many movies, like I said, you have a big sports movies guy, but like the goal movie in football, your man can't kick a football, and especially believe he's playing for some Real Madrid, ridiculous. Like, but yeah, I think Shia LaBeouf, like, the great movie, and I think it's fair, it's, you know, it obviously is based on, you know, true story, so you get to see a good bit of what golf was like, and again, not race card, but kind of class card with different people as well. That, but I think really well shot as well.
Yes, lovely movie. So basically it's set in 1913. A film's about Francis Wilmot, first amateur to win the US Open. Amateur golf in that era was very much like a gentleman's game, only for the wealthy, kind of similar to what we were talking about with the Legend of Bagger Vance story. But Wilmot basically gets to play in, he qualifies for the 1913 US Open. It's played at Brookline Country Club. He plays the US Open qualifier, wins it. Like his he works as a caddy in Brookline. His dad hates that he plays golf. He's like, listen, you gotta get a job. You know, you can't be playing golf, can be playing a game for a living. Kind of your classic kind of dad storyline for a lot of those kind of movies. You know, you can't chase your dreams, you gotta go
Get a real
work,
job, yeah.
get a real job, work hard and pay the bills like I
Provide
am.
for your family, yeah.
And just like some really, really nice story, like the friendship between him and his little like 10-year-old caddy who was up to his waist, and like the golf bag was longer than he was tall. And when he ends up winning, obviously he's playing against Harry Vardon and Ted Ray. Francis Wilmot wins, and they all pick him up, and they all start giving him money, like, because obviously he can't win the prize money. So everyone in the stands or whatever, like the spectators, are all giving them money, and Child Bus character just tells him, no, give it to Eddie, give it to Eddie. And like the little 10-year-old kid getting all this cash, he's like, this is amazing, this has changed my life. And classic Disney, you know, finishes really upbeat. But I love that. I thought that was a great movie, really, really good movie. I'm gonna watch that again tonight. Number five then is Judge Elias Smalls from Caddyshack. I think like every country club or every golf club, definitely the golf clubs that I've been a member of, have kind of members like this who, you know, they walk around like they're the big swinging whatever of that golf club. They're the guy, but he's just very funny. Like he comes out with, he gives us the famous, like the now famous, well, we're waiting gif, which is brilliant. And like for that, I think that's just like, he becomes instantly iconic for golf. He was pretty good, but I mean, like, you know, just even for that iconic moment is why he has to be in there on the list.
Top four. Yeah, so number four, I'm gonna go with Roy Tin Cup McIlvoy. Like, just everything about him, like his, like him and his caddy are just hilarious. You know, when he's in the 7 iron, and he keeps snapping clubs, and he finally gets, you know, when he's on the driving range, and what has he got? He's got the shanks, and he's just keeps hitting the rest of the golfers, and then finally he's kind of like, do this, and you always hit the 7, right, and all this sort of stuff. But just again, the fact he's a driving range pro, and he's living in the caravan, and then he gets Godin to come back, and then, you know, it's a weird one because he doesn't win in the very end, but like he finally makes it across with the ball and how many he's hitting, and I just, yeah, he's just, you know, classic American storyline, love, you know, his the girl and everything. It's just, I think he's class. I think it, you know, I think he made the vest cool again, you know, the white vest cool again. I think it was gone for a little while, but yeah, I think Roy Tin Cup with a 7 iron beats anyone.
Yeah, I think that's the great thing about the dad movie is he's playing the tournament, he's in the lead, in and around the lead, but on the 18th hole every single time he thinks he can make that 220-yard carry, because again with that scene we're talking about where he hit 7 iron 227 yards, he knows he can hit that carry. But every single day, round one, round two, round three, hits them in the water, makes a drop, and bogeys that hole. And then on the 18th hole, he's in there with a chance to win. And everyone's like, for the love of God, just like, he's got crowds, like throngs of people behind him. Everyone's like, you're going to beat David Sims and all the rest of them. Just lay up. And he puts like, what, four or five golf balls into the water?
And then he turns to Kaz like, this is our last golf ball.
Yeah. And so then he makes it, and everyone goes fucking nuts. And the main actress, Renee Russo comes up to him, and she's like, "Oh my God, you made it!" And he goes, "Yeah, but I lost the tournament." And she goes, "No one is going to remember who won the tournament." And you're like, "That's it. That's why you and I are on a hull, and you know that there's a 200-yard carry hit over water. That movie is the reason that we go, I gotta hit it. I got I
Yeah.
cause imagine what it's gonna be like if we carry that water." And that's why every like average golfer does the same thing, is you're kind of emulating your tin cup. You're like, "No, we're not laying up on this. Could you imagine if I carry this? It'd be unbelievable."
It's that every golfer is like, we all think, we can hit our pitching wedge so far, and we're always in an arms race. No, even now, like, all you want to, like, I keep seeing these things. Never three putt again, or have a 350-yard drive. 350-yard drive I'd take and stay in 18 handicap for the rest of my life if I could drive the ball 350 yards. Like, it's all about being able to be length and make it.
We're on to the top three here now. This is a fun one because I think obviously people are going to know kind of in and around who are the top three, but this is an old school one. And Ty Webb, Chevy Chase's character in Caddyshack. The reason we like Bill Murray isn't actually on this list is because Bill Murray never plays golf in any of his movies.
Oh yeah, you're right.
He's
Yeah.
obviously in Caddyshack and wrote Caddyshack, doesn't play golf in it. Which is hilarious because him and his entire family are golf psychos, like proper golf fans.
Yeah,
So,
someone always finds a picture of him at a random golf course in the middle of nowhere. Like, Scott, he's up in Scotland randomly on a Tuesday, and someone has a picture with him. Like,
yeah. So I guess you want to talk about a cool golfer, Chevy Chase. He makes golf cool, kind of. There's just like his sarcasm throughout it all, kind of just giving the whatever kind of terrible advice he was given to like Danny Noonan and stuff like that, and to like the young kid that was also a really good golfer in that movie. But like just from doing like the blindfold of golf, and he's just very cool. I think that's it. I think while Happy Gilmore probably like as a movie gets a lot of attention, and Happy Gilmore as a character probably gets a lot of love and attention, I think Ty Webb and Chevy Chase's character is probably like the epitome of a cool golfer, but not like suave cool, but just like your everyman cool.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
I like Chevy Chase. I like Caddyshack. It's an underrated movie.
He also pulls off that hat that I think many can pull that off.
No, that's true. That's true. That brings us then to number two, two and one. So no guesses who the top two places are going to be, but the order we have them in is a little bit different. Happy Gilmore is in at number two for us. This movie is one that resonates with golfers around the world. Doesn't really matter how good a golfer you are. You'll still occasionally hear like JT and Rory and stuff like that. JT's a good one for it, actually. If he misses a putt, he'll occasionally go, "Why don't you go in your home, ball? Get in your home." Like I think to make a movie that is that iconic, that like tour players at the highest level of the game are referencing, you know that you're onto something. Like the fact that like when Will Zalatoris came out on tour, everyone was like, "What's Happy Gilmore's caddy doing playing the PGA Tour?" Could you imagine making a movie that's that iconic that when you come out of college, everyone's like, "What are you doing? You're
And it's
this kid from this movie years ago."
yeah, and it's like it's not even his full-time caddy, it's his caddy for one tournament in
Yeah.
the movie. Like, and Will, I'd say Will hates that he's compared to that guy, like, just because he's like, "I'm actually a golfer," like, whatever. And they're like, no, you're just Adam Sandler's caddy.
Do you remember when he goes to pick up the bag and he gets tackled? He's like, I'm your caddy, Mr. Gilmore."
And it's like, "Oh, I don't need a caddy. I carry them myself. Just stand and make sure I don't do something stupid." And then having more stands in front of your man's ball as he's teeing off. "Good luck." He's like, "Get out of the way." Like, he's just a qualifier to the PGA Tour, and he doesn't even know where he's at. Like, there's so much of it. You're like, it's so funny, and like, you can end up quoting the movie back and forth in like loads of circumstances. Like, or when he when he's singing, he starts singing into the intercom.
Oh yeah.
And then the old woman in her shopping is just there listening. Like, oh.
Like how many times have you tried to hit the Happy Gilmore shot when you play a round of golf?
I probably do it once every I do it every time I go to the driving range, at least once, I'd say.
Yeah.
Maybe that's a bit of an exaggeration. But I did in the driving range. I've never done it on a course because I'm like, I'm gonna get kicked off. But I've definitely tried it in Leopardstown.
I played I used to work with a guy, and I played a round of golf with him at Charles Land back in the day when the Charles Land was still open. I played with him and his dad, and we got to the ninth tee, and they just looked at each other like, "Oh, we're doing it," and I was like, "What are we doing?" And they're like, "Every time we play this hole, we hit the Happy Gilmore shot. We just like it's just something we've always done. We love that movie. We've always done it." I was like, "That's cool. How iconic is a movie that like people go out and play golf and go, well, I have to try it. I have to do the Happy Gilmore thing."
Like, yeah, I think Harrington's a big believer that there's nothing wrong with it per se. Like, you know, because as in, you know, Harrington's very sciencey and looks at everything possible. And he was doing a drill, which was kind of a Happy Gilmore-ish thing to get his speed up. Cause he was saying that it makes sense. It's just, obviously you're going to miss the face of the driver for more times.
You must be good at a Happy Gilmore shot, because it's a combination of hitting a hockey shot and a golf shot. So you're stepping into it on your left.
I've made contact with it, but I don't. I think I end up with a hockey. I fight a slice anyway, so that's my hockey swing coming in. So I can make contact with the ball, but I don't know it'll ever go near straight ever.
What I want you to do next time we're playing around in golf is if you make a birdie putt, like a good, like long one, I want you to start going around and do the ball dance where he's there just slapping the back of the putter head, making a big putt.
I tell you, making a big one. I'll tell you why, because I'll tell you what I love. So in at number one, and I think this might annoy people, but I've kind of pushed you into taking a shooter McGavin. Like, I just think he's such a classic character. Like, I think the one he makes the putt and he has the gun, gets the fingers out. Shooter's tour. Like, I don't know if you follow him, but I think I might have followed him on our Bogeyman Twitter account, but there is a shooter McGavin Twitter, and like he just tweeted something ridiculous, like my JT might win a tournament. He's like, "It's fine, JT, but still shooter's tour," you know. And it's loads of, I just like also the ridiculous. How upsetting would you be as shooter McGavin? You've been playing golf your whole life. You're now in your prime and you're winning. Is it something like he's won eight, or how many tournaments did he win the year that Happy comes on, or something?
10. Which is, yeah, for context, is one win more than Tiger had in the 2000 season.
Yeah, so he's got it right. And then this gobshite comes on. He's wearing an ice hockey jersey. He's putting with an ice hockey thing. He's beating up people. He's smashing the ball. He can't put. At one stage, he has like a 7 after he drove the green. And now the game that you love is now, as he says, a circus. And you know that time where he's like, he's trying to putt and there was two bikers in the woods off, and he's like, "I'm trying to putt with like two bikers in the woods trying to have sex. That's not golf, okay?" He's like, "This is gone. The game is gone." Like, he's literally been, I'd say it must be the most frustrating thing in the world. But like a few things, like, you know, he turns to Happy and he's like, "Let me show you how you do it in the pros," and he puts while like looking up at Happy Gilmore and it goes in.
Yeah.
So I'm going to give, as a character, I think he's hilarious. I think he goes mad. And even in fact, he goes to try and cheat and pay your man to scream at Happy Gilmore. And then he like goes and buys his house, you know. And like, I just think as a character, I think he's so good. And
are you saying Shooter McGavin's the hero of that movie?
I'm saying he's misunderstood. And I think he cut a bit of slack. Because it was never Happy's dream. But it was... Yeah. It was Shooter's dream, okay? Like, and if the roles were reversed and Shooter just arrived in and taken an ice hockey position, there'd be uproar. So I think there's definitely a thing about his morals and what kind of guy he is. But I think he's just such a great character, and you'd watch golf for Shooter McGavin, you know? And this might be really harsh, but there's a lot of it, he strikes me as Phil Mickelson.
I was going to say, what's the comp for a real life golfer? Is Phil?
I think it's Phil. And I know people, I think Phil, some people love him, some people hate him, but he's entertaining. And I think Phil is a really interesting character. And I actually got that book for Christmas. I get a 3 minute maybe over, I might read it and do a little review for the pod, the one on Phil, because he's such an interesting character. And I would definitely think Shooter is very Phil Mickelson-esque.
Okay, I like that. That's a good comp. I like that. I think that's good. So yeah, without a doubt, Shooter McGavin is the greatest fictional golfer around. That's our official list. Don't use it for anything serious, but that's just us. Right, let's get back into something a little bit more serious. Farmers Insurance Open. Fair play to Matthew Pavon, third tour start in the PGA Tour after finishing in the top 10 DP World Tour last year. He knocked out Rasmus Højgaard out of that top 10 spot last year on the final event of the season to get his PGA Tour card. Fair play to him. Three starts and he gets his first win at Torrey Pines. Not an easy place to do it. He tried to give it away, but on the 18th hole, but it was just, that was classic. That was really, really good. First Frenchman to win on the PGA Tour. It was good. It was just like a really, really good storyline.
Yeah, because I had a bit of, like, I was listening to the commentary, like, and obviously he won the Spanish Open last year, then he got his card to the PGA Tour. Like, he was on the Alps Tour in 2015, and then challenged on Deep World Tour. And do you see his tattoo in his hand?
Yeah. I really hope that's like I actually don't hope it for his case, but the saliva that flows now will become the tears of joy tomorrow. Like,
so he was asked about it. And he's basically saying that every time that he's practicing and he's putting in the grind and he's sweating, it's going to be the happy tears when he picks up a trophy.
But saliva isn't sweat. Saliva comes from your mouth. Like, you salivate when you're like hungry. You know, when you're like, your mouth gets real like watery when you're thinking of like a burger or something. That's saliva. That's not sweat.
I know, but that's what he was saying. It was about, all about hard work.
And, yeah, I know, but like, and it's also a permanent typo.
I know, but it's not that much time, but it's also like the tears. Why are you crying? Could you not be like, the sweat today is the happiness of tomorrow or something? Like, I don't, like, it was, and it's big. It's a full sentence across his hand.
A couple, like, of lines, isn't it? It's like three lines.
Yeah. Like, it's not small little thing hidden away on the corner of his wrist. It's literally on the top of his hand, which is.
Which hand is it on, left or right? Sorry, that's such a specific question. My point is it his glove hand or his other hand?
No, I don't think it's his glove hand. I think it's on his right hand.
Jesus.
But like, it's very big. Like, the minute you see him holding something or his hand there, like, you don't look at anywhere else bar his hand. Because I've never seen a sentence tattoo across it.
That must hurt so much. Like, there isn't like any like fat on your hand. It's just like skin and then like bones and tendons. That, like, compared to like you're doing it on your bicep or your ass. Doing it on the back of your hand must hurt so much.
Yeah, definitely. It would be very painful. But also, what I did think was a couple of things that were pretty cool about the Farmers Insurance was, one, it was over the two courses. So you're round out of your, so you played before the cut, you played one round on each course.
Yeah.
I think Torrey Pines.
North and South.
So you, and then obviously the cut happened and they played in the big one, which I thought, like, for somewhere that, like, you could, if they did that more often, you're going to have more players because you've got the two courses running.
Yeah.
And then the second thing, I actually liked the fact that it ended on the Saturday, just because of, like, this NFL on the Sunday. I was just thinking, like, if there was more joined up thinking about sports along, well, that would make a lot more sense, because I'm like, the reason they did it was like, well, we're just going to lose people watching it. Whereas this is like, people go, okay, I'm definitely watching this full on Saturday and then NFL Sunday. So I think if there's more joined up thinking, a lot of sports, you know, means we get to see more. So I did actually like that. I thought that was very mature thinking from the PGA side. Also, Højgaard coming in second, Nikolai, tell you, those two are playing, they're playing ball.
Yeah. It's I don't know, kind of a golden era right now for young European talent. Obviously talking about Fitz and Tommy Kippen coming up, but like, you got the two Højgaards, you got Åberg, you got Victor Hovland, Thomas Dietrich, obviously he's not too young, but he was in like the top four or five there going into the weekend as well. So yeah, some good golf, some very, very good golf going on from the European side. Moving on to the Drip Watch then, your favorite segment of the podcast. I've actually forgotten what the soundtrack or the intro music that I did was for Drip Watch.
Oh yeah, I can't remember.
It's like da-da-da-da, or something like that.
It was something like that. Anyway.
So we're on the Drip Watch.
My thing, as I was saying, two things was, first, I thought Olsen's polos were really, really nice, the ones that he was wearing. Yeah. I liked the way the buttons were, like, the material around the buttons were a different color. It was kind of lit, it kind of half looked like a professional shirt. And I was actually surprised that Galvin Green, which actually surprised me, because I wouldn't be normally a big Galvin Green fan, but I thought they were really nice. And then you mentioned the fit of them were really good. I think that's why he looked more jacked. I don't think he's that jacked, but I think the fit on the arms made him look you know, like more jacked. I like the whole fit
I
of
don't
the
know, man. I think he's pretty fucking jacked. I think he's pretty jacked. I
He's
think he.
not. He's not Bryson jacked or Brooks.
No, but like, oh, I don't know. He might be more jacked than Brooks. Look it up on your phone there, real quick. But yeah, I agree with you on Galvin Green. I always kind of associated Galvin Green with like,
Waterproofs.
or like my granddad, you know? Like,
Yeah, I think the guy would be the big massive waterproofs and you'd be stuck in them. But I think the polos are really nice. I like them. I really liked them. Yeah, I thought they were really nice fit. And then also I think the way he wore, he had the kind of, you know, the old, not the, I want to say old fashioned, the classic pair of shoes. I think the trouser fit was nice. And then with the kind of modern kind of flat peaked baseball cap as well. I thought Olsen was very drippy. He was my
he's a
favorite.
fashionable guy.
Yeah, no, I was a big fan of that. And then also just I was kind of flicking through highlights and stuff and saw the Nelly Korda won on the LPGA tour and she was wearing a black Nike hoodie. And like normally I'm not a big hoodie person really on a golf course. I think, you know, there's no need for them really.
She's
Even
wearing
if
the
it's
joggers as well. I'm just looking at them here. Look, she looks pretty, looks like an athlete.
exactly, and it doesn't look non-golfy. Do you know what I mean? I don't like this idea of being able to wear a hoodie on a golf course. You don't look. I do respect, you know, tradition within certain things. But I thought she looked really well, and like in the middle of the hoodie looked really cool, and the fit of it, and then the joggers, and then she looks to look like a golfer. So I think that was definitely something that was very, very drippy. So yeah, fair play to Nelly Korda on her choice of fashion with her Nike because she looks better in that than Rory does in his stuff.
Yeah, big time. No, she's so good. She tried her very best to give away that tournament. Talk about how Matthew Pavon kind of tripped over himself a little bit toward the end. She had to go eagle birdie on the 71st and 72nd hole to shoot two over for the day to make it into the playoff, which is just like she was playing brutal, just like super nervous. And it was even funny, like the Sky Sports commentators beforehand were talking about how she kind of has a final round stumble, like it's a little bit of a thing where, like, unless she's miles ahead, she'll and again she was kind of she's like 3 or 4 shots ahead going into this. She kind of needs a bit of a cushion to get it done in the last couple of tournaments that she's played in, but because she didn't have a win in the LPGA Tour in 2023 at all. She won on the Ladies European Tour, but not in the States. I think she's gonna win a lot this year. She's class. Like she is generationally good.
Also,
She's gonna win a lot.
like a lot of pressure when you're going to win and what you're wearing. I was just thinking there, like obviously we picked two, like I Olsen and Nygaard were two winners, but like you pick the wrong thing on a Sunday and win, you're forever remembered as looking like an idiot. And I'm just saying Victor Hovland has to be very careful with what he picks now because he's going to be in the winner circle. And I'm just saying the guy needs to make sure whatever he wears Thursday, Friday, he needs to make sure his Sunday stuff is top drawer. Because that's what everyone remembers you for. You gotta look good, feel good, play good.
Yeah, I would say Victor would think he thinks he looks good in what he's wearing. I also think Victor doesn't care. I think he just opens up the suitcase or whatever it is that Jay Lindenberg sent to his hotel and goes, okay, that's what we're doing. Because they're all labeled like Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. So Tuesday practice days and
Yeah, I
like
know, but
Dortmund.
do you not remember? Like, there's what's I'm not sure when it was. Could have been the Netflix documentary, but they do Colin Morikawa, and Morikawa is not happy with some of the Adidas stuff he's been given.
Yeah, I think Victor's just like, I don't care. Like I could spend useless energy worrying about what I'm gonna wear. But I think he's just like, I'll just use the energy on winning tournaments rather than worrying about how I look. Can't be arsed.
Sometimes he looks ridiculous, though.
Yeah. I'm not saying he doesn't sometimes. I'm just saying I don't think he cares. Right. Moving on, because we could be on this for a while. On Tuesday, I went to Golf Ireland for the Callaway Golf Day. I got to talk. I got spoke through with some of Ireland's PGA professionals. What the like new Callaway product line is going to be from the drivers, the woods, the hybrids, the irons, putters and the golf balls. We're not going to talk about all that right now. I have a podcast coming out with some of the team from Callaway over in the UK in the next week or so. We'll sit down with Chris, one of the head fitters for Callaway Europe to talk about the drivers and the golf balls in particular, a little bit about the putters as well. Obviously, we've had the putters for a while, but it's really, really cool. It's really good. I guess for anyone that's a very gear heavy podcast. So anyone that isn't too into the gear, maybe give that one a miss because we go deep into the tech side of it. But top line, what the new Callaway AI Smoke is all about is just bringing in your dispersions and helping you making your wides not as wide, and as such with that, there's you're losing less spin when you need the spin, and so you're getting more yardage. So if you're hitting like a low necky cut, it's less low and less necky now, so it's not going way right, and you're getting a little bit more distance because it's not going as far to the right. Same thing with the high toes. If you're hitting out of the toe, it's not just going miles left. It's going left, of course it is. Like it's going left because you're mishitting it. That's the whole point. But it's not going anywhere near as far left. And then as a result of it not traveling so far left, it is traveling further. I went out and played Paris Court there like the next day. And just like anecdotally, it was brilliant. I was driving, it was definitely coming off a lot hotter off of the face. I was definitely getting a bit more distance. So between that and the gym workouts now, Mick, I might finally have a chance of catching up with you after tea.
I'm gonna need to get a new driver. That's what I'm gonna get now. I'm gonna have to beg Callaway for something just to so you can't get ahead of me.
Yeah, so I'm going to be going out to Mount Juliet this weekend. So I'm actually going to go to the Top Tracer range and I'll get some actual specific numbers. So I'll hit my old Paradigm driver and I'll hit the new AI Smoke and just give kind of direct comparisons for what those numbers are like, what the misses look like. So you actually get some kind of real data from like an average golfer. Obviously, loads of PGA professionals do this, but like a lot of PGA professionals don't hit it out of the toe or out of the heel as often as you think. So, like, this is some real data that you're going to be getting from me here now. Some real bad shots.
Yeah, exactly. I think the same thing as you hear all this stuff, like, does it always work? I was always very skeptical about new clubs that were coming out. And even when we got those putters and the lads were saying, listen, this is going to improve, I was like, really? But like, the putters have made a huge difference to me online. So I can only imagine the driver makes another massive difference. Like,
Big time, big time. So one of the big headlines in the last week or so, obviously the PGA shows are going on over in Florida, over in Orlando in the States, but the world's next great seaside links is going to be coming to Ireland. Kirklareby Links, located just off of Kirklareby Beach, is going to be designed by Dana Fry and Jason Straka from Fry Straka, golf course architecture, and developed by the Neville Hotel Group. The Neville Hotel Group also own Druids Glen, so they've been doing a lot of the work on the Druids Glen Hotel, Druids Glen Golf Course, and the Druids Heath. So ground is being broken for this new Links golf course this February, so like 2 days' time, and the course is expected to open in 2026. That's going to be part of like this like Ravenport or Ravenport Resort, I think it's Ravenport Resort that's going to be going there. So I think we spoke about this on our Hidden Gems podcast, where like Rosslare and that region of golf is kind of underserved, and like you don't really go down that way for like a weekend of golf. This golf resort coming in now will really change that. So that'll be great for golf and kind of for the southeast. But I guess for people that like don't know a huge amount about golf, I think like 20 million quid has been put into this development between like the hotel and the golf course and everything. Film buffs, obviously we were talking about movies earlier on. Saving Private Ryan, that D-Day scene. In Saving
Oh,
Private Ryan, that was filmed on Kirklareby Beach. So
nice.
yeah, it's very, very good. And then Fry Straka, that group, that our golf architecture company, they've done a couple of pretty good golf courses over the years. They've also done Erin Hills, which hosted the 2017 US Open. They've done a serious number of like top 25 golf courses all around the world. This is going to be their next big project, and we actually have an exclusive interview with Dana and Jason coming up in the next week or so, which will be really interesting. I'm going to be talking to them about kind of the work that's going to be beginning next week, or that week, I guess, as it is, the whole process, how they kind of got that bid. This is their first project in Ireland as well. So I don't know. I guess there'll be a good chat about what we can expect from the new Links Resort. Are we going to get like our answer to Erin Hills or something? That would be pretty sick.
Yeah. And I think, like, speaking about the those golf courses in Ireland, we're not going to get any new ones because of the links and that sort of stuff that are disappearing. I think every golfer saw this and was like, okay, brand new place, no one will have played. And with the reports coming out that it could be absolutely box office. But a new golf course that like no one in Ireland has played, and as we know, it's just going to be so exciting for people, and everyone's like just buzzing. Every golfer I chat to that kind of loves going around Ireland playing has been asking me about this. Go, well, what do you know? What's the feeling going on about it? So really excited for that podcast.
Yeah, that'll be good. I'm looking forward to that. That'll be very, very golf nerdy. And then I guess before we get into the final segment of the podcast, before we get into the bet of the week, we also have a podcast coming on Wednesday where I sat down with Oliver Wilson, a Callaway Tour player. He spoke about his kind of his roller coaster of a career, from playing Walker Cups, getting onto the DP World Tour in kind of 2005, doing very, very well in the Order of Merit kind of 2007, 2008, making the 2009, 2008 Ryder Cup team, and then very much losing his way. And I mean, like, I mean losing his way. He got properly lost, went down to the Challenge Tour, couldn't wasn't able to hit driver, was like hitting driver off the deck for 6 or 7 years, to eventually working with Robert Rock. And now he's won twice in the DP World Tour, obviously 2014, which he says was a bit of a flash in the pan, winning the Dunhill, but then winning the 2022 Maiden Himmerland. He said that he wants to get a third win, and he wants to not cry when he wins this time. So both times when he won, he just bawled his eyes out, which is great, like good moment. Maiden Himmerland in particular was a great win. So that's going to be live on Wednesday. Great chat. Really, like recommend listening to that chat. That's a really good one. And we got a few more tour players coming on over the next few weeks as well. So Michael, any other business?
Just, I think a couple of things is just Liv. Obviously, we haven't spoken about it, and they haven't even started yet. But Adrian Morong to Liv looks to be pretty much a certainty at this stage. To be honest, I don't blame him
No,
with
me neither.
regards to not being picked in the Ryder Cup. It's a funny one though, considering he just got onto the PGA, got his PGA Tour card. I would have maybe thought he might go for a year and just see what it's like before making his decision maybe to go to live. I thought he would just see how he could cut on the PGA Tour and maybe rack up a win in America before going, and kind of ticked it off his list. But having said that, I'd say striking the iron's hot. He won the DP World Player of the Year. He got off, he'd won on there, so maybe he thinks he could be one of the big stars on live. So again, don't blame him going. But interesting to see now what team. Like, the other thing is there's so many players on live. I can't work out who's going to be on what team or what's going to happen.
Yeah,
Like,
because they're talking about now there being 13 teams. If you go to the Lift website now, there's 13 teams. So obviously, John Rahm's 13 is the his team is the last team to be added to it. But then even this morning, it's been confirmed that Tyrrell Hatton is also going to be joining Liv on like a $50 million deal. So you got to think, like, how much money did Morong take to go over to Liv? If Hatton's only getting 50, and I understand 50 million quid is a lot of money, right?
yeah, but in the RAM numbers or the draw numbers we're talking about, like it's I get you. Yeah, like I think whatever the length of the contract is as well, they are getting guaranteed golf. If RAM's going to play in the Ryder Cup, well then they can't kick out Hatton in the Ryder Cup. But the difference being with Hatton is you're not John Rahm. Like,
Yeah.
John Rahm or Rory will bend rules. There's like Morong at this point, like I'm not a Morong fan, but is Tyrrell Hatton that much better than Morong? Probably not really when you're looking at it. Like, so like the Ryder Cup can survive without Hatton, it can't survive without Ram. So
Yeah. Like Tyrrell Hatton's 32, right? Like how many Ryder Cups are you gonna have Hatton on realistically?
yeah, maybe.
Maybe one more.
As you know, like I think and obviously we don't know the finer details of when the merger or when they're going to come together, what it's going to look like, if it's going to happen. But the more this is happening, you can see, like, is Tyrrell Hatton going, you know what, I'm just done at chasing my card, et cetera.
Yeah.
He's like, I'll go to live, I'm going to enjoy my golf, I'll be on a team, I'll be around, we'll have the crack, it'll be very enjoyable. Maybe. But I think the Morong one is coming from him being pissed off, and I get that.
Yeah, I understand that for sure. Like that's kind of a, I'm not feeling the love from you guys. You guys overlooked me. Like, what else do I need to do apart from win 3 times on the DP World Tour to make a Ryder Cup team? I get why he's just like, peace. Does it make you want to watch Live next week, though?
Ram does. I mean, but I'm again, I will be judging Liv now off if I have feel any buy-in to the teams. And if Rams team is not very enjoyable to watch or there's nothing going on, then I probably won't. I think I think the only way I would really like live is if the team stuff gets very competitive, etc. And there's a bit of slagging going on, or you know, Rams like, oh, we're gonna bury them, whatever. Then I might get interested and I might feel it, but I don't know. We'll see.
Okay, interesting. So yeah, I like that. You're not passing judgment just yet. Nick Dunlap then also, he's announced he's turning pro and will make his first professional start at this week's AT&T Pebble Beach Pro-Am. I hate this event. I can't stand the Pro-Am. Mainly because it's just a bunch of celebrities hanging out with golfers playing shite golf on TV and thinking they're funny, and I can't handle it. So it's a no from me.
Okay, so I'll watch a bit of the AT&T Pebble Beach and I'll review it then, will I? And you can just have a break next podcast for 5 minutes.
Yeah, sure, we'll do that. Yeah, you can watch that. Right, moving on to the final segment of this week's podcast, our Bet of the Week. The DP World Tour is set to return to the Kingdom of Bahrain for the first time in 13 years, with the Bahrain Championship scheduled to take place at the Royal Golf Club from this Thursday to Sunday, the 1st to the 4th of February 2024. Bet of the week is where Michael, you and I place a 5 euro bet on each of the DP World Tour's action. It's not a crazy amount of money, obviously. We're just doing this for a bit of crack. So if you want to keep track and you want to play along with us, please do so. But just remember, we're doing this for a bit of fun, so gamble responsibly. Last week, both of our bets missed. We spoke about the boys already earlier on the podcast. They did well, top 16, both of them making 30 grand. If those boys want to recoup us for that 5 euro lost, Tom, I'll send you my Revolut, and you can send that tenner back to me, and I will split with you, Michael. That was tough, though. I'm not gonna lie, because it was I really backed the boys. I backed both of them to do very well. They just missed out by 2 shots, but as it stands right now, Michael, you're up a fiver overall, and I am up a whopping 150. Tough scenes for the boys.
Yeah, it's tough, but I think I'm also looking at it as if we haven't backed anyone that has like missed the cut or come dead last or had a blow up. Like we've now, maybe I think my bet's probably safer than yours. But we, I think we cut ourselves some slack last week. The two lads did well, as we said, kind of, you know, they shot well. But I'm just glad I'm beating you.
That's all that matters in this, is that one of us is winning. Okay, you kind of alluded to it there. Who have you got? Who are you backing this week, so?
Again, I'm caught, and I was gonna go with Rasmus last week, so now I'm caught because I think,
Gonna go with Rasmus again.
but it would be Rasmus to win outright.
Just outright win.
But then like Xander Lombard in a top 10 is 18 to 1, so I don't know. It depends. I'm gonna go Xander Lombard in a top 10, so 18 to 1. Each way, so whatever, fiver or whatever, 250 each way, top 10, 18 to 1. I'm gonna go with him. I know it's gonna, I know Rasmus is gonna win now after I've gone for Xander, but Xander had a really good, I think he was really solid last week, and I think that little triple bogey is just a little blip. I think he'll come good and come top 10.
That's a good bet. I like that. I've probably gone. You said you've gone safer than me. I would disagree. I say that's probably a bolder play than I am. I'm kind of currently looking at two players, so both of them were top 20 plays. Mainly because the field at this event is not fantastic. Let's be honest, it's a hell of a lot worse than the Hero Dubai Desert Classic, and even a couple of other players are kind of dropped out from even the Ras Al Khaimah Championship. People have kind of just done their 3 week set in the UAE. They're gonna go chill for a couple of weeks and then go on to the next couple of tournaments. But yeah, neither of these bets are going to yield a huge amount of return of investment. But honestly, I just need a win. I need a confidence boost, and that's what I'm gonna do. So again, I agree with you. I think Rasmus should get it done. He's the highest ranked player in the field, I think, at this point. Maybe Austin has overtaken him after the win this week. I'm torn between Sebastian Soderberg for a top 20 plus ties at 29 to 20, which is pretty crappy odds. So I think I won't do that because I'll only get back like 7 euro 25 or something like that. So that's not great. My other play is to back Callum Shinquin. So to finish top 20 at 11-5. So I'm gonna go with that. Callum did very well last week. I think he's trending. I'm keeping an eye on a couple other guys. Like I said, Richard Mansell is one that I want to keep an eye on for the next couple of weeks. He seems to be doing quite well. Him and Ewan Ferguson, two of the boys that I'm kind of tracking to see how they get on. So yeah, that's it. That's it from my side.
Yeah, I think Connor Syme is a good one as well. And I think if people want to look out for someone, so Antoine Rosner, I think could be someone that could do quite well. But I would love to see Rasmus win. I think I think it's a different kind of pressure now with him being the top man in the field. So I think it's a good challenge for him to go and write, okay, I'm the best here, and he put my foot down and win. So
it's kind of a shit or get off the pot type of situation for him now at this point. He had got top 10, top 15 in the first Dubai Invitational on the Hero Dubai Desert Classic, tied for second on his own here in Ras Al Khaimah. He's been in the mix now for the last 3 weeks. He needs to get one done. It's a weaker field. He needs to do what like John Rahm did when he played the Mexico Open. Top ranked player in the field. Just go win. Get the W and just move on.
Okay, guys, that'll do us for this week. So again, a couple of things. If anyone send us in your picks for this week, if anyone said anything different or if you think we're off the wall, do let us know, because we'll follow on who you're going for. And if we've missed any movie golfers as well that you can't believe we missed, do let us know as well. And if you totally disagree with us, please tell us. But I'm actually looking forward to the Pro-Am, the Pebble Beach Pro-Am. I said I think it's a nice way to ease yourself back into the season of golf. So I'll definitely I'll be the one who feedback on that next week.
On the tee, Jack Nicklaus.
This is the minute the millions around the world have waited for.
We will allow you to enjoy all of this. They are dancing in the pubs of Dublin. Harrington with an ace.
And we have a shining star at sunset. Rory continues his run to greatness.
The return to glory.